This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's T Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's T Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-T today or visit mensteclinic.com. That's mensteclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Final hour, fist pump time. Get it on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube.
I'm getting it.
I'll be seeing Pauly D in person very, very soon out in Arlington. Tell him that we do this for the final hour of our show. I'm Sean Schrafe alongside Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. Choppy still out on the honeymoon vacation. We got Peyton and Aiden in the back and you on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Thank y'all for being a Tolo, and that stands for Turn It On, Leave It On, as yesterday we aired the live press conference, we think the final press conference, of Nico Harrison recapping the Dallas Mavericks season. Did you see at the end of it, he got the Jamal Adams key card?
Yeah.
He walks, like, tries to walk to the door, and it doesn't work. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's going to blow up all over the internet with people saying they already deactivated it. It's done and over with.
Yeah, you know, when Mac joined us at 720, and he had said, you know, I kind of thought when he brought some papers up there just for a second, maybe the Mavericks thought he was resigning too. And they were like, great, we can just go ahead, deactivate his card. He'll be done.
Do you think the number one headline is the Luka love? What's the number one headline from yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, the one that kind of exploded was I knew they loved him, but not that much.
Did the anger and outrage from the fan base, has that exceeded what you were kind of planning for?
Yeah, good question. I did know that Luka was important to the fan base. I didn't quite know it to what level, but really the way we looked at it is, you know, if you're putting a team on the floor that's Kyrie, Clay, PJ, Anthony Davis, and Lively, we feel that's a championship caliber team, and we would have been winning at a high level, and that would have quieted some of the outrage. And so, unfortunately, we weren't able to do that. So it just continued to, you know, go on and on.
So the headline reads, Nico underestimated the love for Luka in DFW. That's just one of 50 headlines you could write. And it makes him come across as unaware, absent-minded, basketball dumb. Mm-hmm. Like, where have you been? Do you operate the Mavs from outside of the Metroplex? Are you in another city and state? That's the way it's coming across. Like, how people are like, that's a fireable offense right there to say I didn't realize the Luka love was that much. That's a fireable offense. And then to compound it, the report from Tim Cato that Patrick DeMont was frustrated with Nico for not warning him how the fan base would react to a Luka trade. What? Like, if you came up with two statements that would have been nearly impossible to believe, like, say the dumbest thing possible about the Luka trade. The leaders of your organization being surprised by the backlash and the outrage, that might be at the very top of the list.
Yeah.
No. That might be. Not realizing how much someone is beloved? How? How's that possible?
Yeah, and it's the way it's said and it's the words that are used that really come off poorly, but I don't think that that's an uncommon opinion or take. Like we were talking about last hour a little bit, like, I didn't realize it was going to last this long. I was upset about it, but I think the intensity and how the stamina it's essentially had. I don't, even the people who are still worked up about it, I don't think they had a clue that Dallas was going to be worked up as a city like this for this long.
Well, they also unexpectedly kept grabbing cans of kerosene and pouring it on. You know what I mean? Like, they kept making it worse with their handling of it.
Yeah, it's like
It's a lesson in PR.
The guy who should not talk is Patrick Dumont. He's the one who's been talking. And the guy who should be talking, Nico Harrison, isn't talking. Like when we were talking about it, I think it kind of clicked for me finally why it's been so bad for them, which is, like I mentioned, the fact that Nico wasn't out there and you couldn't see his humanity. You couldn't see him looking uncomfortable or, like there was no, you didn't feel like you were attacking a person. You felt like you were attacking an idea, an entity, whatever else. And so it's much more comfortable to get more and more aggressive with it. Whereas if Nico just would have been out front, it probably would have softened things just by being accountable.
People love Chris Young because they feel like he's got blood, sweat, and tears in it. That like he's... Jeff Bannister had that about him, I thought. Banny had an amount of fandom that people related to and connected with and loved. And you know that, like, Chris Young, you can feel an emotional connection with his rage or disgust or lack of patience and his competitive fire and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when Nico was a robot, that's what it was. It was the Nico 3000.
Yeah, it's like we've mentioned before, when Jerry made the Brian Schottenheimer hire, and that was really, they knew, they could hear all of the buzz about it. They knew how the fan base felt about it. And so what did Jerry do? Jerry sat down and at the opening of that press conference, talked for basically 15 minutes straight with that Jerry demeanor of care and hold your hand and
tearing up.
I didn't take this lightly. Like, that's the difference between somebody who's a pro at this and somebody who came from being a shoe salesman.
Yeah. So the most uncomfortable part of the press conference was the straight up question being asked. Nico, you've heard the chants. Why should you not be fired?
Well, one, I think I've done a really good job here. And I don't think I can be judged by the injuries this year. You have to judge from totality, from beginning to end. And so I think I have a really good working relationship with Patrick. I think you add in Rick. The leadership that we have is really elite. And you'll see next year when our team comes back, we're going to be competing for a championship.
Also, came up with a strange way to describe the chants at the AAC. He's like, 20,000 people chanting fire Nico. Awesome. Awesome in a bad way. I don't know whether I've really heard awesome described in a negative way before.
So because I know that was the kind of the reaction. It's such an old, antiquated definition of it, but it's technically true. So, like, if you look up the dictionary definition, awesome, extremely impressive or daunting. And so, inspiring great admiration, apprehension, or fear. So, like, I think he's using the sense of, like, I'm in awe. It is awesome. Like, and that's the kind of sense. Because it is, it's got to get to you. No matter how stubborn he is, no matter how emotionless he seems at times, you can't, like it's talked about there, 20,000 people constantly just saying, fire Nico over and over, that gets to you as a person. It's just going to.
I felt like Jason Kidd was absolved of blame with a Tim Cato report that Jason was frustrated that they did this to his roster, built around 77, and all of a sudden flipped it on its head. Nico tried to say something finally nice about Dirk, saying he's the single most important figure in the history of the organization. So they went and checked that off the list.
So quick, though. I know we're probably being nitpicky and stuff, but it was so quick and passive. Just like, hey, by the way, he's the most important figure. Anyway, the fans will get over this. to me, I thought I was.
All right, let's listen to it. Let's see how fast and quick and drive by it felt.
Well, one, you mentioned Dirk, and so it's important to say like he's the single most important figure to the franchise, so that's extremely important. I believe winning will help repair the relationship with the fans, and that's what we plan to do next year.
I swear, when I said this is how like quick I felt it was, that felt like he was still talking about Dirk. Like when I first started hearing him say, I think winning will repair, I was like, oh my gosh, is he acknowledging there's a fracture with him and Dirk and he needs to repair it? And that, but no, it's just he was All right, let me just quickly say Dirk's awesome. And now let me go to this.
Nico did not want to do last week's closed media roundtable. Dumont made him do that. And part of Dumont making him do it was his frustration over Nico not warning him that people would lose their S after the deal. And then Cato says that calls from the Mavs fan base to fire Nico have certainly been noted by Patrick Dumont. The complicated factor is that Dumont believes that firing Nico could lead the team to a directionless rebuild. Okay, I'm glad you're noting it as if it wasn't obvious and you just get another general manager to take over.
Yeah.
A directionless rebuild. You're not rebuilding right now.
Would you rather, I mean, like let's say that even is what happens. You go into a directionless rebuild. Would you rather just
trade AD and Kyrie this offseason? That would be a rebuild.
Would you rather roam the desert in a directionless rebuild, or would you rather sit front seat for Nico Harrison driving a car off a cliff? There's a direction. It's right off a cliff into the ground. That's what Nico Harrison has set up here. They're no, already screwed.
No, they're not. I'll disagree with you for the first time today. And Mac Engel came on, disagree with you as well. You can have a good team.
I'm sitting here, Mac's not.
The health is a tremendous question mark, but if healthy at important times of the season, they could have a good competitive team next year. I think they're going to make a play for Kevin Durant. There are people within the Mavs organization who do not think so. Shams was talking about KD to Houston and the armpit, but The Mavs can be a playoff team next year.
I still, I know I said it to you at the end of Crosstalk the other day, but I'm still going with, I think that for any year that Anthony Davis is here, there's not going to be a year where they finish above 500. I think they'll be 500 or below the entire time.
Nick Harris tweeted, am I reading this McMahon report correctly? Did Nico attempt to leak practice footage to the media months before the trade to paint Luka in a bad light? So this has to do with McMahon's article where like this closed circuit video of Luka just shooting jumpers during his injury was circulating and playing, and a Mavs staffer noticed it and like shut it off, and it never played in any of the media rooms since.
Yeah.
Is this what you're thinking as well?
So I hadn't thought of it in that perspective. Once I saw Nick's tweet though, it made me, yeah, I stopped down, I looked at it, and I was like, that seems weird, but I mean, also, how bad did he look? Like, was it like, could it be that just maybe somebody was in there monitoring it themselves and forgot and were like, oh crap, take it down? But it's, I would not put it past everything petty we've heard about this organization. I would not put it past them to do something like that.
At what moment did you realize you wanted to trade the franchise to the Lakers?
Yeah, it was never like, it wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back. When you live with someone for 3 years, you get to know their strengths and weaknesses. It was more about a change in philosophy in terms of how can we get a top defensive team that will help us win a championship. Again, this trade may never even have happened, but once the opportunity presented itself, we jumped on it.
So that wasn't something that had built over like 6 months, 8 months, 9 months?
No, not at all.
Brandon Tolo on the text. They keep talking about this like they didn't trade an icon. That wasn't Monte Ellis or DeMar DeRozan. That was the face of Dallas sports and one of the most beloved athletes ever. People named kids after him. The emotional disconnect just infuriates me to no end. There is a Tolo. Did you see the Twitter of his daughter in the Luka jersey?
Mm-mm, I don't think so.
She's standing in front of a TV with a Luka jersey, and he still has not had the heart to tell her. And she's like, Dad, can I wear my Luka jersey to bed? Like, can I wear this to bed? And he's too afraid to, like, tell her. That is kind of the tone of what Tolo Brandon is saying right there. Stop. That would have been another piece of advice. Rick Welts, stop comparing this to Andrew Bogut, Monte Ellis, and DeMar DeRozan. Please, for the love of you know what.
Yeah, I will say on the Nico front, and I don't think we had this cut, but one of the bigger issues I had yesterday was what I felt was just like a direct lie from Nico where he goes, I haven't said anything bad about Luka.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yes, you have. like, and
not directly. I just leaked it all.
It's, and I mean, like, yeah, that's the,
they, yeah, that ticked a lot of people off.
I agree. Let's move on. I haven't said anything bad about it. No, that's not true. You guys clearly have been assassinating his character.
It's a smear campaign.
Yeah, 100%.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, for him to, that was an issue yesterday where he just flat out lied about that.
Yes. 877-881-1053. So you're saying Alec Medford did a bad job not including that on the cut sheet.
Well, Peyton is the one who put together the cut sheet. Alec sent all the cuts.
Good job, Alec.
Bad job, Peyton.
Very nice. Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece at 9:40. Let's bring in the Hockey Hawk, Gavin Spittle, working morning show hours after the Stars' thrilling OT win over the Avs. Let's talk a little game two next on Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fan.
Blackwell into the slot, shoots. Save made through traffic by Blackwood. Blackwell scores! It's over! This series is tied!
4-3, overtime win. Gavin Spittle with the 9 o'clock fist pump here on Sean and RJ. Choppy out on honeymoon vacay. We got Bobby Belt here.
I think that was more Arsenio than Pauly D.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
What did you think when the game went to overtime?
So, kind of funny story. My dog.
You're looking fresh. You're looking fresh this morning.
You know what? Thank you. Yeah. Clean threads.
Yeah. Vibrant.
Thank you.
These pants are a little too loose on you. You're fading away, man.
Yeah. New look, man. Shred season. So funny story. I'm watching overtime and I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Tim Collins texts me and he says, do you think it's going two overtimes? And I said, this is too wide open. It has to end.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All of a sudden, Victory Plus, my screen goes dark. And I'm like, at this time, why would they do this? This is amazing. And then I realized my dog was on my remote control. So I flipped it back and Colin Blackwell was celebrating. So I rewound it and saw how the play happened. So super excited.
Tell us about his story.
So Colin Blackwell is a kid that grew up in Massachusetts, went to St. John's Prep, went to Harvard. For those that don't know, Harvard actually has a really good hockey program. It's very much storied. They play in the Beanpot every year. So they're, you know, a top-notch program. A lot of pros have come out of Harvard. So suffered a real bad concussion and missed his junior season, most of his senior season. But then was able to play a little bit and then caught on, I believe the San Jose Barracudas were his first team. And he went to Nashville and played for the Milwaukee Admirals. And finally got the call up, and he's been basically a journeyman and had one of his best years in Chicago last year. Stars noticed, they sign him, very reasonable deal. And then he did really well for the Stars when he's played. He provides energy, he provides grit, and now he provides a game-winning overtime goal. It's beautiful.
What have you noticed style-wise after the first two games? Is there anything style-wise with the matchup that has surprised you? I know you were a little concerned about the physicality of the Stars going in. You noted the difference in hits where they were basically evened up yesterday at 45 compared to game one. How are you looking at analyzing this style versus style after the first two?
Yeah, so the definition of physicality in hockey has certainly changed. It used to be drop the gloves and go at it, but physicality is actually a nice check in the corner. You're basically releasing the player or holding the player away from the puck. So you're creating opportunities for yourself. So you could call it physicality, you could call it forecheck, whatever you want to call it. The Stars implemented that. They did not have that in game one. And they really are not a physical team. So for them to come out and do that, it comes back to the coach, Pete DeBoer. He wants his players playing in straight lines. He wants net front presence. Remember, Blackwood, who's the goalie for Colorado, this is his second playoff game. So you almost want to create that frenzy in front of the net. And Colin Blackwell did that at the beginning of the game. And when he came back to the bench, you could see the other players say, good job. So they're trying to get under Colorado's skin, let's just say, try to create havoc, because havoc, as we've seen in this series, creates just weird goals. Like, there haven't been many goals where you're like, whoa, that's amazing talent right there. Mm. And that's what happens in the playoffs. It's all about lucky puck bounces, but you make that luck happen.
It seems like, I mean, it seems to me counterintuitive to even think that, like, a hockey team, I just think of it as such a naturally physical sport. Like, I can't even conceive of, like, oh, a team that's just not physical or struggles with that sort of thing. Why hasn't that been, or why do you think that's catching up to Dallas at this late stage of the season? And the response they had yesterday being good, but why wasn't this something that was plaguing them more consistently along the way during the regular season?
Well, they've shown signs, Bobby, and every once in a while they'll pull it out. It's just not their MO. They're based on speed and they're based on talent. So when you see them play and teams allow them freedom to come out of their zone, they are amazingly talented. But what's happened is that teams, similar to what Colorado's doing, they're going to go deep on the forecheck. They are going to really halt that speed. There's a great way to neutralize speed is to exhaust in their own zone. And I think Dallas actually flipped the script later in the game and did that to Colorado, where Colorado was struggling more to get out of their zone. So you're so exhausted coming out of your zone, especially the late stages of the game, that you just need to flip it out and bring another line on.
And things get more physical in the hockey playoffs like basketball?
Yeah, absolutely. They say the rink gets smaller. And what that means is that everything tightens up. And Craig Ludwig once told me, he's like, there's...
Well,
yeah, I know. Name drop. Two-time Stanley Cup winner. There's...
Gotcha down.
That's a different... That's good. So there's preseason hockey, and then you ramp it up for regular season hockey, and then it's a different season in the playoffs.
Gavin Spittle in studio here on 105.3 The Fan after the Stars tied things up in overtime.
Is that why there was concern about the style play? Because, like, when you mentioned, you talk about Dallas being such a speed team, if things tighten up, is it just, look, that speed's not going to be the advantage if the rink is small. You're not going to be able to get that head of steam and execute the way you want.
Yeah, if you neutralize the Stars' speed, you have a really good chance of beating them. But notice what the Stars have done with trades, picking up Granlund and then utilizing Blackwell in game two. So they're kind of countering and saying, hey, we got some grinders. That's why I said I absolutely love Evgeny Dodonov, specifically in the playoffs. He will always get you a big goal. He did it last year, and we saw last night, got the game-tying goal. So players like that that know where to be, know when to exert their physicality, and just right place at right time. And that's why they miss Jason Robertson, because Jason Robertson is not the best skater, but the puck seems to find Jason Robertson, and he's got a really good shot. So what we have to understand about the Stars right now, and I'm not trying to, like, if Colorado beats them, that's why I'm saying Colorado is one of the better teams in the NHL. It's just a bad matchup. It's a bad matchup for Colorado, too.
Yeah.
At the same time, if I took away Cale Makar and, let's say, Martin Natchez from Colorado, I think the Stars would have a really good chance of winning this series. So flip that. The Stars are without Haskinen and they're without Jason Robertson. So, like, our expectations just, I think, have to be leveled a little bit right now.
What was your original pick for the series?
I had Colorado based on how the Stars were playing down the stretch, and I just didn't feel as though you can snap your fingers and make it happen. I still think that minus maybe the late stages of the third and overtime where I thought the Stars finally got to playing their hockey, I just feel as though it's an easier game for Colorado right now, whereas Dallas has to really work hard to make their chances. So it did flip late in the game. Let's see what happens on Wednesday night.
You mentioned Robo, and I remember during a playoff run, like, all the heat was on him. Like, when is he going to do something? When is he going to break out of this? And last night, I felt like PK Subban and some of the others were kind of trying to light that spark under Ratanen.
Yeah.
And PK is like, hey, man, you're the best player on the team. Like, we need you to show up. You need to show that. Let's elevate the energy level. Where do you think we are with that? And how has he been playing? And what are you expecting?
So I really like Miko Rantanen's two-way game, both offensively and defensively. So I've said on the podcast that, to me, we're really going to see Miko Rantanen next year. We have to understand this player has gone through four different systems since January.
Baker
Colorado. Yeah. Colorado, Team Finland, then Carolina, and then Dallas. But elite players need to step up. I actually thought Rantanen played pretty well last night. It's just not going in the net right now. I think he's an elite passer. And what we have to understand is, I'll use the Luka example, hate to do it, but just Luka Doncic being on the basketball court opens up opportunities for other players. So while Miko Rantanen might not be scoring, there is a reason that other players are getting open. The bumper position in the middle is on the power play. That was closed for a lot of the year. It's been opening since Miko Rantanen's been there because players can no longer cave toward that middle. They have to go out and challenge Miko Rantanen.
I know you mentioned, we were talking last week, I think, you were talking about how Rantanen already going back to Colorado, already having that experience was a good thing because then you didn't have to worry about that when you get into the playoffs for the first time. The other side of that, though, in terms of a potential emotional lift and advantage for Colorado, how big is a factor, a big of an emotional factor is it that Landeskog might make his debut back in Colorado?
I mean, absolutely massive. Think of a team leader, maybe Dak Prescott, I think, is a good example here.
Where, me from paternity leave.
Yeah, that's right.
Shohei Ohtani.
When Sean Sharif comes back into the lineup, I mean, the energy just comes back.
Landeskog would have to miss every other game, though.
I think it says it all when Miko Rantanen, on his night off, tuned into a minor league hockey game to watch his buddy Gabriel Landeskog play. He's just a team leader. He's a presence. He hoisted the cup. A perfect example is when he won the cup, he knew exactly who to give the cup to. Like, he's just that team room guy. So him just even being around the guys right now and the possibility to play. Remember, this happened to the Stars a couple of years ago where Steven Stamkos came back from a game when they were in the bubble against Tampa. So, you know, I think it's a big lift for Colorado. I think the building will be buzzing. However, this Stars
Colorado
team. Yeah.
This will be buzzing.
There you go.
We joke.
This Stars team is really good in playoff road situations. It's almost like they gel.
Is Landeskog more of an emotional boost than he is on the ice? Like, is there a question about it? Like, is it a Willis Reed effect where Willis comes out there and it's supposed to just be an emotional lift rather than he's not necessarily going to make a big impact just coming back with rust and health and other things?
I think he will make both because Landeskog loves to play in front of the net. And that is something that I think Colorado really desires right now. So, I mean, he played 15, 16 minutes when he was, you know, down in the minor league game. So I think he's ready. It's just a question if Jared Bednar, the coach, when does he want to insert him or does he want to insert him? I mean, let's be honest, the third and fourth liners for Colorado were absolutely fantastic last night. They, I mean, single-handedly almost won the game, them and Nathan MacKinnon.
The podcast got fired up last night after the overtime win. Little past midnight, and Peyton Russell, you found something within that broadcast?
Yeah, Spittle asked me this morning. He was like, hey, you might want to go pull something from the podcast. I was singing a little late last night, so here it is, a short little clip from Gavin Spittle, Spits and Suts.
We did it, folks. 8 games. See you later, baby. Here we go. There's number one down. Will we crack number two? Oh, the Frosties, they will flow. The Frosties, they will flow. Hi, hi, Mario. The Frosties, they will flow.
Fantastic. Well done.
Is that
see
excitement?
See what Lucius says about that.
Yeah. Is that excitement? Is that excitement, or is that also just it's 1 a.m. and I'm
tired? Yeah. It's a combination of like being excited and a little, you know, I mean, you know.
Send that on over to Lucius. I want to see how he covers that.
No, that's all right.
Same
Peyton,
energy, Lucius.
Compared to Peyton.
You don't have to do that, Peyton.
They roasted Peyton pretty bad on G-Bag yesterday for his singing. And
I heard.
Yeah, Lucius called him Jim Henson. So
yeah, that was a good reference. That was a good reference.
You have to worry about PR, dealing with all these knuckleheads in here and working side-by-side with the Cowboys and Rangers. What would be your Mavericks advice? They called you up and they're like, hey, man, you know, Rangers, Cowboys flagship. You talk to the PR people and Charlotte and Steven and Jerry. What would you tell them?
I think just a bit of acknowledgement and honesty goes a long way. And I think acknowledging rather than saying I didn't realize, just saying, I know this has been very tough on the fan base. I hope you understand what I was trying to do. It will play out whether I'm right or wrong, but I truly was doing it for my hope of bringing a championship here. That's my job. And I know my job's on the line, but I'm doing the best I can. And then sit in those stands. And that's the biggest thing.
Go back in the stands.
Yeah, and it's very, very tough. Like, you feel for them, but then you don't feel for them because, you know, your franchise has taken a step back, and that's really tough. But, I think honesty, but we're kind of past that point because they should have came out right away and said that. So now it's very tough. How they get past this is going to be interesting.
Thank you, boss. What coffee are you using to get through the day after the late night?
Oh, man, boy, we got some really, really good brews today that we're going to throw. I think we're going to rock something from South America. I can leave some for you for tomorrow morning.
All right.
Yeah, I got to leave some for Peyton for when he leaves his house so that he's not just dozing off on his drive-in because he won't drink coffee until he gets here.
Yeah, and by the way, I did 45 minutes of that podcast by myself last night, Peyton, just saying.
Gavin Spittle, the Hockey Hawk, spits and suds for all your Stars post-game celebration. We crosstalk and continue to celebrate with the KNC masterpiece next. I'm getting the disapproving hand on the hip wife look from Kevin Hagelin.
Where were you last night?
I guarantee you your wife wouldn't ask you this question. Do you still think cursive is the future?
No. I'm running
out. What do you think happened? Like, where did we go wrong?
With cursive?
Yeah, because like we were all learning cursive and it was supposed to be the future. I used to think that's the only way a transaction became official. Mm-hmm. What happened?
What made you think of that?
I don't even remember now.
Nate Bargatze said it in a stand-up once and stuck with me.
Does anyone use it except for signing? And why do I still have to sign in cursive? Well, I mean, why can't I just print my name?
They don't put it in the schools anymore. So, I mean, no, I don't think anybody's...
There's no cursive in schools?
Mm-mm. Yeah. And most things are like e-signed and stuff now.
In cursive.
Yeah, I know. Wait, but why? Like, that's not my signature.
If you were to handwrite a letter to someone... Would you do it in regular print or cursive?
I do it in regular print.
Could you write cursive?
Yeah, I could. I have really bad handwriting, and with cursive, it's problematic.
It's so hard.
In regular writing, it's passable.
Like every other person who uses cursive, some of you can read, but there's like every other person when they write it out, I'm like, I can't read what you wrote.
So my mom for the longest time would write like in birthday
Bobby's
cards
too.
And everything in cursive, and I was like, I got most of this. I got the gist.
Then my mom went the way of cursive.
Oh my god,
she died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's more extinct, that or cursive?
I mean,
some people
Bobby's
use cursive.
Mom.
No one, my mom's, she's in the ground.
I don't think you could write out a sentence as easily as you think.
You're probably right.
It's, I'll get.
I'd stuck. Have to think about it a lot.
Yes, write out. I can write cursive. Write it out, and we'll see how everyone's looks.
I can't do cursive.
Can't do it.
Mm-mm.
Corey?
My name is Jonas, is what I wrote there.
Yeah, you have some pretty handwriting.
I screwed up the N. It looks like an M. But yeah, that's the last.
Yeah, the M, you don't know where to start. Like, do you go with the line up, or do you just start at the top and go down
Everybody
with the M?
Everybody does it a little differently, you know?
Yes.
That's how we get signatures. My kid's already practicing his signature.
Kevin, you're already really holding your pen weird.
Yeah, so.
Oh, my God.
I told you I do not have good handwriting. So I am left-handed, naturally. But when I was in kindergarten, I went to a private school because it was fancy. And I had the old lady, Mrs. Bobby. She was nice otherwise.
Mrs. Bobby?
That's right. I swear, true story. She would pop me with a ruler every time I wrote with my left hand. So I had to start transitioning over to the right hand. I had all those stupid pencil grips that I never embraced correctly. And so now I write weird.
Ah, glad you transitioned.
What's this little book?
Oh, yeah. That's just my book of ideas.
You want to steal that one, don't you?
Is it just ideas?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like in Elf, whenever they steal.
Miles Finch's book.
Yeah, Peter Dinklage's book, and then he gets all mad.
Have you ever seen the
his ideas?
Contents?
You would hate the way it's written out, too.
Sean, it used to be this. It used to be a steno pad.
Yeah.
He got fancy on us. You know, when he got to middays, he decided to get real fancy.
What kind of ideas are in this book? Is it like segment, like day-to-day ideas, or is it like longer term?
There's some
ideas?
Ratings in there.
Like a wrestling storyline?
No, but yeah, I will put ratings in there as well. But it's a mix of both short and long term ideas.
Is that moleskin? Is that what that is?
I don't
know. What's the thing?
Did you keep a journal ever?
No. But my wife is super big on having like monogram things. And I don't think this is monogram, but she got me like a monogram checkbook cover. And I want her to know that I'm putting them to use.
What does that mean, monogram check? Like,
the little thing you put your checkbook in.
Oh, okay.
How many checks do you think Peyton's written in his life?
Two. With that bank account?
A lot. Actual manual checks?
Yeah, I had to pay rent with a manual check, and then in college, I wrote all my. You had to put in an actual check.
I'm the one who's written the least.
Isn't that such a beating? Like you pay someone for a service, and you're like, all right, you want Venmo, PayPal, or Cash App? And they're like, no, I want you to send me a check.
Only take pennies.
The beating of the finding the stamp. And they go into the mailbox. It's such a pain in the ass.
Back in the day at the grocery store. Sorry, that would beat me down when somebody in front of you would take out their checkbook.
I think I've written 4 checks in my life.
What were they and for?
They were all for like county tax office.
Oh,
that was it.
What did you guys pay rent in?
Money order,
or
just I would just go to
favors.
Yeah, that too. But I would go to like racetrack and get a money order.
You guys said you wanted to talk Kanye at 11:40.
Nobody said
what?
That.
What?
Nobody said that at all.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know what's going on from the 3-2-1. What does Kevin think about Kanye and his cousin?
Okay, so this will lead to the other off-air discussion that we had.
Totally made up that text message.
So, I guess Kanye hooked up with his cousin or something, and so. Like
for a while
there, I think people are doing a bit. There are a shocking amount of people who have questions about how far out the cousin can be before you can hook up with them.
Oh,
and my general thought is just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Man, why did that get pushback from you?
Well, I'm not pushing back. I'm wondering how far down the line.
If cousin is attached to their name,
you should not.
Fourth cousin.
Like if it takes genealogical research to find out we're related somewhere, and like maybe that's okay.
No, I know technically everyone is related.
But the girl is like a 13 out of 10.
I mean,
all right, and it's like
interesting choice of numbers. Sip.
I don't know what the reference. 12 out of 10. 14 out of 10.
There you go. That's a good number right there.
Sean Stan.
you would be like, okay, is this my line on it is if we hooked up Would everything be fine with the child? That's my line.
See? agree with Corey's controversial opinion.
But what is...
What was Corey's controversial opinion?
That is my biggest concern in that. Yeah.
You're fine.
But if the baby's fine...
Well, Kevin said that you would go to hell if you hooked up with your cousin. I was like, I don't know that God's like that concerned about that part of it.
What's
I don't know, though.
What's that chapter? Him.
That's how they populated the earth, Peggy.
Oh, my God. That's totally the way we used to do everything.
I'm just saying we had to populate there. We had to start from Adam and Eve and work down.
No. I was just kidding. It just feels like a questionable decision. And I like you doubling down and being like, well, it depends on how hot she is. I want to see your draft value chart of cousin hotness versus how far away they are from you.
You guys are a bunch of damn liars. If you walk into your family reunion and some supermodel knockout comes in and you're like, I've never seen her before. And then your uncle comes up to you and they're like, well, she's actually like your fifth cousin. You've never met her before. You never
met her at
see
a family
her.
Reunion, yeah. though. Don't do that.
Yeah. And so it's more convenient now. And you're like, all right, I'm never going to say, you all are a bunch of liars. If you're not in the moment,
here's
the thing. Being like, okay, like, all right.
Like I said, if it takes genealogical research to find out you're related, probably fine. But if you just know consciously, like, yeah, that's somebody I'm related to, it's too close. Yeah.
Would you rather hook up with your fifth cousin? I don't even know how far we go.
I can't believe there's so much pushback on this.
Fifth cousin or your your bestie's ex?
Oh, like from a... They're unacceptable both. For different reasons.
Both?
Peyton.
They're unacceptable for different reasons.
No, you have to pick one.
Okay, well then... Yeah, it would have to be bestie's ex, because one of them is just like, I feel like...
It's not like, you're not crossing, if they tell you that nothing's going to get crossed up in the genes, then it's just a mental thing.
Oh, it's getting crossed up in the genes, bro.
Corey, what's coming up?
Oh, yeah, do you know multiple presidents marry their cousins? So
see, Roosevelt. And they became president.
It's been a while.
Wasn't George Washington, wasn't Martha a cousin?
I mean, FDR
married
one of his cousins.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Did he know?
Probably, I guess.
Oh, he knew. Puck around and find out at 10 o'clock so we get some Stars action right out of the gate. And gentlemen, at 11:30, Dallas Cowboys pre-draft presser. At 11:45, more presser. At noon, more presser. And 12:15, potentially more presser and Gridiron Gravy.
Sounds like Mike's favorite show.
Your emotion during the Nico presser on your program yesterday. I listened to your reactions afterwards.
It was interesting.
Did they pass the test?
It was entertaining. We had a real weird...
Nothing stood out.
We had a real weird clock, for sure.
You know what stood out to me is nobody gives a damn about what happened with Casey Smith.
That's true.
Oh, yeah, I did hear you. Not one question about that. Yeah. I thought... I caught heat for this on Twitter. I thought Nico tried to be nicer, less cold.
I agree.
People just don't want to hear anything.
There was one specific question that I really wished he would have answered, and it was, did you think Luka was a championship player? And I know he was like, well, he's not here anymore, so we're not talking about that. But yeah. I'm like, yeah, but you made the deal when he was here, so it feels relevant.
So if he said, I was thinking about that too. It was a great question. I thought all the media did a great job.
I did too.
Yeah, they crushed it.
Really impressive. If he said, yes, I think he's a championship level player, he's a... automatic, no doubt, Hall of Famer. And then the follow-up to you, Nico, is, well, then why would you trade him? What would you say back?
If I'm Nico?
Yeah.
If I'm Nico, I would say because I think Anthony Davis fits in with this group as a higher-level championship potential player.
Okay.
I don't think that, but I'm saying, like, that's what he should say.
Right.
The other one I didn't like that he sidestepped was the question about Denver winning the championship 2 years ago with a middle-of-the-pack defensive rating.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I'm not really worried about Denver. And I was like, the question is not about Denver.
I didn't love the question the way it was phrased. It was more
he could have phrased differently.
Yeah, it was like, take me back to that Denver team and the pros and the cons and the ups and the downs. Basically, it's teams have won with middle-of-the-road defenses. What do you say to that?
And white Euro players. Like, it's not a stretch to see how those two could be connected. But we talked about it.
Well, usually a stretch five is a year.
That's true.
Yeah.
There's no apology coming because what you heard in that, and at least it's crystal clear for all of us, Nico thinks he has done nothing wrong. He said, I made your basketball team better. What's the problem? And like, at least now you know there's no apology coming because he doesn't think they did anything wrong.
I still don't totally believe him though. Like, I don't believe that he totally thinks they're a better basketball team. I think he just really hates Luka. I think so much of it was personal, and he's just not going to say that.
What was it just the culmination of things, or was there, because he said there was no straw.
I mean, he does not like being questioned, and from all the behind-the-scenes stuff we hear, it sounds like Luka didn't give a damn what Nico had to tell him.
That whole line of, like, the world doesn't need to revolve around Luka that we heard from him, like, we don't have to do that anymore.
NBA literally is about revolving around your superstar. That's how the league operates.
No, I get that, but is it problematic at all, then, if you didn't give a damn what your last head coach said, or your last GM said, or what this GM said?
No, because he's good enough. No, he's good enough. You put up with more when you're good enough. And he's good enough.
We're back tomorrow with Zach Wolchuk in studio.
Hagee hits Luka.
What?
Dude, that was day one. Sean, you remember that.
How is that the takeaway?
You said he was a fringy top 73 player in the league.
Look at him more like your fourth cousin, Kevin. We're back tomorrow with Zach Wolchuk in studio to preview the draft. The KNC Masterpiece is next.